From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Greetings, cucks, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am your daddy, Hunter Deucing, and with me is Thor's hammer himself, John Grace.
Yep. Polishing the hammer right now.
Yep. Right. He's going to make some cucks suck on it, right?
Yes, exactly. MAGA dogs.
I'm going to keep bringing this up every show. I think we need to have the art redone, Midnight Movie Cowboys, and just have Thor's hammer.
Yeah, we might have to.
Rebrand.
Just as a temporary thing for the next 5 or 6 months.
Just until the election.
Just have Viking imagery all over. Have like Kirk Douglas and Tony Curtis.
We're only going to do Viking movies. Next week, it's going to be the Vikings. Then we're going to do Valhalla Rising.
Yeah.
Then we're going to do individual episodes of the show Vikings.
And then we need to swipe one of Master Chim's Viking t-shirt designs.
Yes. Oh, we're going to do Mario Bava's Blades of the Knives of the Avenger.
Is that right? Right.
You know? Yes. So plenty of Viking material to go through.
Oh, yeah. Yes. All movies from Scandinavia. Rock Month will just be Backyard Babies and Turbo Negro.
We'll also do the show Lilyhammer. With that guy from Bruce Springsteen's band just acting like a pig in Norway. Just acting. It's like if Nick DiPaolo went to Norway. That's what that show would
be. I watched half of the first season. It's actually pretty good.
No, I saw the first season. I didn't see the second season, but I thought it was really funny.
Yeah, but once they killed a sympathetic character, like my wife didn't want to watch it anymore. So if I'm going to finish watching it, I've got to do it on my own.
Yeah.
But. Well, maybe it gets better. But then I know that supposedly they responded to the praise they got from conservatives and were like stunned by the praise. So they were going to do something about it.
They wanted to change it. They were like, oh, crap.
Oh, no. The crazy right wingers in America like us. This is not good.
Hurdy-gurdy-gurdy.
John Wayne. Bang, bang. No, no good.
No good. So. No good. We need to have little Stevie.
Roy Rogers, apple pie.
We need the little Stevie to be more like Bruce Springsteen.
Yes, he must be like Bruce Springsteen, or possibly John Minstrel Cramp. Their album sold very well in Scandinavia. Yes.
God.
I don't even know where the hell it was set. Was it Iceland? I can't remember.
It was Norway.
Norway, okay, it was Norway. I haven't watched it in like 3 years.
Yeah, which is, you know, is a very un-Nordic response based on the paradigm we've set for ourselves with the Vikings.
Exactly. No, yes. We love the Muslim immigrants. They rape our women because they are so pretty.
Oh, my God. We need to... Never mind, I'm not going to say what I was going to say.
I'm self-censoring!
Censorship!
We are not like Gene Autry America. We'll shoot them on sight with their giant automatic rifles. All Americans have AR-15s in their front yards.
The AR-15 shoot a 30 magazine clip.
I have seen their show Vice Miami. It is real dangerous country.
Vice.
These Americans.
They
do not like all the music of Prince Wilson, like we were led to believe.
The Michael Mann is the poet of America.
The hippies did not take over America. It is still Gene Autry country. Everyone has guns and horses.
Gene Autry singing cowboy. They sing songs and they go bang bang.
Yes. But they make movies about Thor. They're not so bad.
Not so bad. Not so bad. Anyway, Troll Hunter is up next.
Yeah. I haven't seen it. Everybody talks about that.
Oh, it's fun. I like it.
All right.
But So, speaking of racism, John.
Yes.
This week, this is one of the rare Midnight Movie Cowboys episodes where we're going to do a new movie.
When's the last time we did a new movie? Godzilla?
It was either Godzilla. No, I think it was maybe Mad Max.
Okay, it was Fury Road. Okay.
Yeah, it was Fury Road. So we did several when Stu was in America. We did Fury Road and Age of Ultron and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The show I wasn't on for Stu's American tour.
So it's been about a year.
Okay.
So, Legend of Tarzan, you know, I think Tarzan's a character we've talked about a lot on this show.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked a lot about the Weissmuller movies. We talked about him last week with the guy
right,
who got dysentery.
We talk about Pulp Fiction a lot, too. So
yeah, we talk a lot about pulp characters. This is kind
he
of...
He can be lumped into that, since I think some of the original novels were published at Argosy back in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah, you could consider this an MMC Pulps episode. And so we're going to be talking about The Legend of Tarzan, which just had its first weekend. It'll be on its second weekend when this drops. And directed by David Yates, the guy who directed those terrible Harry Potter movies.
Seen him.
Never saw him.
I never saw him. I just never read Harry Potter.
I saw the first three movies. I was in high school, and it was kind of the thing, you know?
Right.
But, and it's written by Adam Calzad and Craig Brewer.
Right, and from what I read, it was a combination of two scripts, one by this Calzad and one by Brewer.
Yeah, it's been a combo.
Supposedly, from what I read, they like the action in Calzad's script, and they like the characterization in romance in her script. So they kind of combined them into one, and so Craig still gets to keep his name on it. I know that he had a couple of assistants help him out, writing his portion of the script. Which, I noticed a lot of the big screenwriters are now using assist or co-writers.
Yeah, because I know that I remember when Craig was working on the... I know Craig Brewer from when I lived in Memphis. I went to the Oscar party for when 3-6 Mafia won their Oscar, and I met him there. And Craig Brewer is a really fucking cool guy. Like, when I met him, I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
So Hustle and Flow was hit. He was like the new big guy in Hollywood. I met him and I said, I was at Rhodes. I work for the Film Commission and, I'm taking a screenwriting class. And, we were talking about, I said that we watched a scene in Hustle and Flow to like show some characterization, like show some good, like character development scenes. And, he goes, well, I'll come talk to your class if you want, you know? And so I went, hell yeah. And so I went, I'm going to go ahead and just say yes and just tell me a date that works and I'll tell you when the class is. And I asked my teacher and he goes, of course, you know. And so like during that time, I was really super cool on campus because
right.
I was getting – I was pulling these guest speakers at school. But so he's a really, really good – he's a good dude and – and I heard that he was, I'm friends with, a guy he worked with, or I mean, he still works with Mike McCarthy, who does like kind of, you know, kind of these trash, like Russ Meyer type movies.
Right.
I mean, trash,
Teenage
like
Tupelo, right?
Teenage Tupelo, Superstarlet AD, Cigarette Girl,
Guitar Wolf like, videos. I know.
Yeah,
the name.
Yeah, like Guitar Wolf videos. He's a kind of this. He's like an art house exploitation guy,
right?
And Craig Brewer worked on his movie Superstarlet AD. His wife was in it. But Mike McCarthy's a massive Tarzan fan. He's a massive pop culture junkie, kind of like pulps junkie, kind of like us. And he was kind of working with it, and he was telling me about, like, Mike was telling me about all the stuff he was showing Craig, like, you know, just, like, in, like, all the Tarzan art and all the pulps he was showing him and stuff. So, you know, when I heard Craig Brewer was working on it and he had Mike McCarthy working, I was like, okay, these are guys who really, like and understand Tarzan. They're not just like me, Tarzan, you, Jane, oh, Cheetah.
Right.
You know, like.
Right. We're going to make it like the Weissmuller movies.
Exactly. And I like the Johnny Weissmuller movies. They're fun, but they barely resemble the Tarzan.
Yeah,
the book.
The MGM Tarzan is a totally different entity. The Burroughs Tarzan.
Yeah, the Burroughs Tarzan speaks. He's intelligent. He's a noble lord, you know. And they've kind of tried at various times to do a more faithful Tarzan. Greystoke is one that is kind of the prestige. It was kind of a prestige Tarzan movie. It was Robert Towne.
And Rick Baker. Also missed the fucking mark by as bad as the Bo Derek one.
It's very – the problem with Greystoke is that you have the first half, it's a Tarzan movie, and then the second half, it's this, like, English drama, you know?
Yeah, it's Hugh Hudson criticizing the English class system. And,
yeah.
None of that is the Robert Towne script. The Robert Towne script never went to England. It was only half a script written. He just wrote the jungle stuff and then just said, okay, finance the movie and I'll write the rest of it. You know, it was one of those old 70s screenplay legendary deals, you know.
And that was kind of a story with Robert Towne, was he was kind of infamous for not finishing scripts. Like,
right. Right. That's what he did. And supposedly, like, and he took his name off of Greystoke and put his dog's name on there.
Yes.
And I heard, like, he even wanted his name off on it at one point. Which, you know, because his screenplay is taught in classes, and he felt like Polanski ruined his screenplay.
Yeah, Polanski made the ending very dark. You know, he had, in Chinatown, you know, he had, you know, it was supposed, like, you know, the narrative is that it was supposed to reflect the Manson family stuff and all the darkness and blah, blah, blah. But, I don't know. I like the ending, though.
Well, the interesting thing is they tried to give Hugh Hudson credit for casting Beer as Tarzan. And it was Towne that originally had planned to cast a skinny French actor. And he had picked this actor who was in like a 1979 French police thriller, the only movie this guy did. And he was going to be Tarzan. He had long hair. And he looked very similar to Lambert, but maybe a little more like a Delon type. And that was who he wanted to play Tarzan, you know, if Warner Brothers would let him direct it. But then he screwed up on his deal with Personal Best, and they took the film away from him and gave it to Hugh Hudson, who was just the wrong director for that project.
And Hugh Hudson was very hot at the time because he did Chariots of Fire.
And he had that condescending attitude towards the material, like, I can do something better than what Burroughs wrote, which is the problem a lot of these guys have when they claim they're going to go back to the roots, and they go, well, it's, you know, it's pulpy trash, but I suppose we can make something watchable out of it. You know,
exactly.
It's that sort of, you know, it's that stuffy way. I love the one great essay in Harlan Ellison's Watching is his review of Greystoke, where he just destroys it. Like, and talks about some of the behind-the-scenes gossip, like how Hudson, you know, Baker had created those really great Mangani ape suits, and Hudson shot Kala's death first. So Baker had to spend the rest of the film patching up the suit from the arrows.
Yeah, you know, I remember reading that in that book, yeah.
That was, like, stunningly dumb, so it's like, oh, man, that, no wonder Hudson's barely made anything since that.
Yeah, he did that Revolution movie with Al Pacino.
Did that bombed, and then he did a movie with one of the Beastie Boys as the lead, and that tanked, and that was the end of it.
I didn't even know about that.
Oh, yeah, it was like Los Angeles or something like that. It was about mentally disturbed. I don't even know what the hell it was. I can't even remember which one starred in it, and it was just, it was in and out of theaters, straight to video, like early 90s, you know, done, or late 80s. That was the last I heard of Hudson. But, yeah, when I saw Greystoke as a kid, I was excited because that first half was closer to the book than what I'd seen before.
Well, and the first half of that movie is great, I think. Like,
yeah, when I was a kid, I loved the Tarzan books, and I was like, wow, we'll never see anything like this in Tarzan movies. And by that time, Tarzan movies were not hip. There hadn't been one in some 15, 16, God, probably 18 years.
Yeah, they're not hip now. They're just now becoming hip again.
Not at all. And then, so I would see Greystoke, and I love that first half, and then the second half is so boring, and Tarzan is never fights anybody, and they build
up.
Well,
it just became like this thing, and, you know, it does have a little bit of that man in the wild theme of Burroughs with Tarzan being out of place in England.
Right.
But it's not exciting. Like, it's not what you want from a Tarzan movie. What you want from a Tarzan movie is him in the jungle, him fighting, you know, him, surviving and all this stuff. And you don't, you get that in the first half and it's fantastic. But then in the second half, it becomes this English drama.
Because being a reader of the books, I wanted him to go to Opar and fight the beastmen and, you know, get seduced by La, the fire priestess, and, you know, the high priestess of Opar and all the, you know, or have him go to, like, Pellucidar or the lost cities where they're dressed up like medieval knights. There's all sorts of crazy stuff in those books that they've never done in the films. They
like
don't even
dinosaurs?
Touch on. Yes! Paludan, where men have, like, monkey tails and triceratops are everywhere.
Yes.
But it's just like, you know, I never understood why they stayed away from the fantasy elements for the films. Like, they were so, like, they were scared the audiences couldn't accept it. Or the audiences were just stuck on the Tarzan Jane romance, which in the novels becomes a very boring thing. And even Burroughs thought so because Jane's not in a lot of the later books. She's not even mentioned. He doesn't even mention that he has a son. It's not even mentioned that he's an English lord. Like, they made Tarzan sort of the wandering adventurer that he is in the 60s films.
Well, it's in the first book with the Greystone stuff, right? And
No, it goes up to about the first 8 books that's emphasized, and then later on, Burroughs saw that. Well, there's more commercial potential in just having as a like a wandering hero getting into these adventures, finding these lost cities.
Well,
doesn't
it's
mention
easier.
It as much. He might bring it up if the story calls for it, but it's not really there. There's no mention of Jane. He wanted to kill her off in like the 7th or 8th book, where and is going after the World War I. And the publisher told him, you can't kill her. You know, your readers will turn on you and stuff. They were actually concerned about the audience in those days. And
they really thought that was important. You know, the audience wants Tarzan and Jane, you know.
Right, right. And it really wasn't the case. I think, you know, the later books, Jane's not mentioned at all, and Tarzan's fighting like World War II, leading a foreign legion and stuff. So it's pretty fun stuff. Like, I just love those books. And Burroughs, I was having a discussion with one of our friends about it, and he was like, he had mentioned that Gore Vidal had said that Burroughs was probably the best action writer of the 20th century.
Yeah, but if Gore Vidal was writing it, he would have Tarzan like butt fucking Cheetah.
Right, right. But apparently he loved those Tarzan books. And, you know, there was something about Burroughs' description of an Africa he never visited.
I think he liked Burroughs' description of Tarzan's body. You know,
yeah, his mighty thews, I think, was one of the mighty thews of Tarzan, built like a Roman gladiator.
Yes,
you know, or what they thought a gladiator was built like. But the interesting thing is, it's like Burroughs' Africa, and I always have to point this out when people talk about the reality of it or whatever. His Africa is just as much as Tolkien's Middle Earth. It's not real Africa. It's
Burroughs'
fantasy Africa.
It's
just like Mars is his fantasy, Venus is fantasy, Burroughs' fantasy. Because the Earth's core is Pellucidar. It is not in our world. It is not supposed to be set in our universe. You'll accept this stuff when Marvel Comics does it, but you won't accept it when a writer back in 1913 creating these tropes did it. You know, it's just he was creating his own world. And I always said that the studios kind of blow it when they could have, you know, you could have a John Carter movie crossover with a Tarzan franchise. You have a Burroughs universe. You could have Pellucidar and all these different characters, and Cassback and Paladon and Carson Napier and all these characters that he wrote, and it could be just like the Marvel universe. I created everything. You have a Burroughs universe, but studios don't think that far ahead. With this film, I was surprised.
And they wouldn't know how to brand it, I don't think.
No, they wouldn't. They don't know how to do that. He's not in print anymore. I mean, most of his books you either get as public domain things and on Amazon Kindle. But as far as like trade editions, he's really not in print.
Well,
like
if you go look for Tarzan books, you're going to find the first novel and the second novel, maybe the third. That's it.
Yeah. And because when I was a kid, Ballantine Books kept those in print with like covers by Neil Adams and Boris Vallejo. And they were $1.95, so they were cheap for paperbacks back then. And they kind of had uniform design. And those sold like crazy. They were in every bookstore. You know, it was accepted. You were going to have the Tarzan books, and they were aimed at older readers. And then they repackaged a few of them in the 90s, trying to aim them at young readers. And by that time, I think young readers were getting into Harry Potter and, you know, Diary of a Wimpy Kid or something. I don't know what kids are reading these, but kids weren't reading that kind of adventure that now seems marketed towards older people. It's strange. Yeah. Like, but when I was a kid, that's what you read. You went from Robert Louis Stevenson and H.G. Wells to Edgar Rice Burroughs and, you know, the old pulp stuff and everything.
Well, it's weird, you know, because back then, you know, your novels kids read were, you know, you had your Tarzans. But you also had your, like, Hardy Boys and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That
was we read James Bond. Well, at least I did. Like, I was reading James Bond novels when I was 10.
I remember reading James Bond novels when I was really young, and mm-hmm. I'm talking about the Fleming ones, and I remember thinking, I was like, ooh, I shouldn't be reading these. There's a lot of sex, you know?
That's what I liked about them. Well, the funny thing is, the Fleming novels are like product placement. It's like he names every product that he's eating, that he's smoking, that he's drinking. Wow, Bond must have a hell of an expense account to afford all this stuff.
And hey, it's what a good Anglo-Saxon man consumes.
Right, but what's funny is Shane Black had said in interviews that he was reading Bond when he was 10 and Modesty Blaze and all that stuff. So, you know, I wasn't the only one. It was like there were different kids of different generations. If they're raised to read, they're probably going to go to that stuff, especially if it's similar to the movies they're watching.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching the Bond movies on TV, and then so I went, I want to read the books because I was a reader. Yeah. And I read the book. I remember reading The Spy Who Loved Me and thinking, this is totally different.
that's like a screw dysfunctional young woman novel.
It is. I remember reading it and being like, "What am I reading? I'm reading about like a fucking wayward broad who runs into James Bond."
That was the first one I read, and I was totally confused. I was baffled. I was completely baffled reading it because I was like, I love the Roger Moore movie. It's one of the Roger Moore movies I like. And I was like completely confused. And I read later that Fleming had specific orders that they could not adapt his novel as a movie because he hated it. He considered it a failure. Well, thanks for keeping it in print. But
I was like sitting there reading it going, when's Jaws going to show up?
Right. But then I read, like, I think Honor Majesty Secret Service after that, which was really good. And actually a lot like the movie. Like, the movie is almost shot off the page.
Yeah,
I'd say it's 85% of the book.
Well, and that was kind of a favorite. That novel was kind of a favorite, and I think that the movie was highly anticipated because it was one that people really wanted. And when a lot of those Bond movies first aired, it said James Bond will return in Her Majesty's Secret Service, but it didn't happen for a while.
Right. Well, the 60s films, I think, with the exception of You Only Live Twice, are pretty faithful to their books.
Yeah.
You know, You Only Live Twice is a completely different story, which they remade for Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker. So you had three remakes in a row. But with Tarzan, it was just like he's such a fantastic character in the books. He's like
The point I was going to make earlier and then I got sidetracked was that it seems like books from in a more modern context, they're about like young kids getting into like in dystopian futures or getting into crazy
stuff. Oh, Orson Scott Card. He's real big with young kids.
Yeah. Ender's Game was huge when I was a kid.
Yeah, I've never read him, but it's like I noticed that
Me
there
neither.
Were.
I never read it either, but it
I noticed
huge.
The young people in my family, in my in-law family, they were reading Orson Scott Card, and I was just like, "Huh, that's a." And they were completely baffled that I never read Card or Harry Potter. I'm like, kid, when I was younger than you, I was reading Mickey Spillane.
Yeah,
you know, I was reading like adult book. Like, if you were a boy and you wanted like action adventure, like you enjoyed in movies, you read Mickey Spillane, you read Ian Fleming, you read Edgar Rice Burroughs, you read Robert E. Howard, you know, and all that stuff was better than any of the movies that were made out of it. And it's just like, I didn't understand reading about kids. It's like, I went through a hard space when I was 8, and that was it.
And like at my school, like a lot of the stuff we read is, you know, it's like a spy novel, but it involves a 13-year-old, you know, or it's a mystery and it involves, you know, kids. It's always got to involve people their age that they can seemingly identify with.
Right. It's like yeah, they're into James Bond Jr.
Like, oh my god, dude, I remember that cartoon James Bond Jr. Did you ever see that shit?
No.
I saw like a few episodes of it one time, but I remember thinking it fucking sucked because it wasn't James Bond.
Oh, I remember when they had a politically correct Conan cartoon that was like,
oh, wow, that would be wonderful.
Oh, yeah, everybody forgot about that. Some people remember the Ralph Moeller TV show that was fairly bad, but at least enjoyable on a dumb level. But there was a cartoon with Conan with a sword he'd never used.
Oh, yeah, it's like the second Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie where Michelangelo's, like, smacking people with salami instead of using
nunchucks.
His parents were mad about the weapons in the first movie.
Parents were mad, and also British censored all the nunchaku scenes and even recrop sequences where they were on the turtles' back.
Well, they were called the Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles in Britain.
Right. In foreign countries, they thought Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles is a more sellable name or whatever.
Yeah, they thought Ninja was too violent, you know?
Right. The Tim Burton Batman got like an X rating in England.
Yeah, that was back when they were really sensitive. Like, they had the video Nasties and all that.
It was goofy. I was like, well, I'm glad I don't live there, you know? But it was a bit strange. But yeah, I don't know if... It's bizarre to me that kids are expected to just read like Harry Potter till they're 20 or something. And it's like reading.
It's like people never get out of that phase.
Yeah, you know? It's like I was reading Warren Murphy and the Destroyer novels, and I moved on to his detective novels, A Trace, and all that stuff. And I was reading those big violent men's police novels of the 80s that I'm always talking with Paul Bishop about on Facebook, you know, William Connets and all these guys who were kind of like the new Spillanes and the new Wambaws and everything, and got into James Ellroy, who's now a friend, but I was reading James Ellroy, just like, good Lord, what is this guy on? Nobody reads that stuff. It's like, nobody's
goddamn
into
right
that.
You read me, John. You, we're both conservatives. We're the only ones.
Yeah, his, boy, I wish I had been able to... His praise of Joseph Wambaugh's early books. It's like he went quite a rant. He was like, he taught me the right wing point of view from police novels. You know, and he was like, I got my ass kicked by the LAPD 3 times, and I am still a big fan of the LAPD. You know, he went on this. Yeah, because he even, by his own admission, he was a degenerate. I mean, it's in his books. He's got a couple of autobiographical books. I guess they're basically autobiographies, but he's got a couple of books that mentions he was a bit of a degenerate panty sniffer. You know, it's just like,
so and, Japanese.
Yeah, he was hooked on. He was like addicted to like codeine or something. It was like
like painkiller or something.
Yeah, it was real degenerate, like California troublemaker stuff. And he said the LAPD kicked his ass 3 times. He beat him up.
Oh my god!
And he's now a big fan because they.
I'm
right.
A big fan. I'm not like that Rodney King.
Yeah.
I don't start riots because I got a beating I deserved.
Ask him about Rodney King or Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton, and boy, are you going to get an earful.
Oh, I would. I would just say if I ever met him, I'd just go, "Hey, James, Hillary Clinton." You know, just it's like a trigger word.
Somebody mentioned Bill Clinton to me. He's like, "I hate that cocksucker." So. Just right away, so.
But Legend of Tarzan. Unexpected hit. Everybody thought it was going to flop, but I will tell you, this is one of the rare movies that got my dad to the theater. I went and saw this with my dad, and so, you know, that should say something.
Right. Did your dad read Burroughs when he was a kid?
I think... Well, we're related to Johnny Weissmuller, funnily enough.
Oh! Wow.
So there's that family connection.
Okay.
To that side of Tarzan. Uh-huh. And, you know, I would watch some Tarzan movies with my dad. My dad always, whenever he doesn't want to do something, he imitates the monkey from Greystoke. He shakes his head and goes, hoo, 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 hoo. So that's one of his favorite things. So... no, there's some Tarzan fandom that runs deep back there, but I don't know if he read Burroughs. My dad was always kind of an art kid. Like, he always, you know, liked that stuff. But I don't, you know, my dad always had trouble reading growing up. He was, I think he's dyslexic. So,
So he probably watched some movies. It sounds like, cause I know the movies were TV Saturday afternoon staples in the 60s.
Absolutely. Like, my dad loved the movies. So I'm sure he was kind of familiar with that side of it, but I don't think he read the books. If I don't know for a fact, but my dad was never a big, I mean, he's a big reader, but it takes him a while to get through a book because he just has trouble reading. But, you know, he's a very visual guy. He designs buildings for a living, you know.
Did I ever tell my Johnny Weissmuller story on the show?
No.
Oh,
or maybe you did, but I've forgotten it. So tell it again.
Well, we'll make it new since we always have new listeners, we hope. You know, when the Weissmuller movies were like the biggest thing on television in the 60s, early 60s, my dad and uncle watched them, you know, every Saturday. So even though my dad was reading the books and really felt like, well, the movies are nothing like the books, but I think he still enjoyed the Weissmuller movies. And, hey, you know, what choice did you have back then? It was entertaining.
Right.
Right. You had two channels on TV, three?
Yeah,
maybe?
Exactly.
I think so the Dumont Network had just been destroyed and, you know, by the other three. And so Johnny Weissmuller was going to make an appearance at the local grocery store. I hope it was a Piggly Wiggly or Jitney Jungle, which were the popular grocery chains at the time. So he was going to do an appearance because those movies were so big on television. Johnny Weissmuller could do like autograph tours and stuff and was paid by promoters to do that, you know. And what else is he going to do? His Jungle Jim series had ended, so he was like, what the hell? And so they go to the grocery store to see his appearance, not realizing those movies were made like 20 years before, you know. And that Johnny Weissmuller wasn't going to look quite the way he did in, you know.
It's like seeing John Michael Thorne now.
Yes, he's not going to look like Tarzan in New York, you know. So it's like he said that he's signing autographs. He looked like an old man, and he had like arthritis. And he was like, they were all so bummed because they thought they were going to meet like the guy who was in the movies, like climbing trees and doing the yell and stuff. Yeah. And he's an old man moving stiffly with arthritis. And it's just like, and it got a gut.
That's like seeing old Elvis TV appearances and then going to see him right before he died.
Where he was like, basically somebody said he looked like a fat man who hijacked a David Cassidy costume.
With gray skin, you know?
You know, that terrible after every note, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just like they were so bummed.
Oh.
And, you know, because, hell, by that time, I think the Tarzan in movies was Gordon Scott or Jock Mahoney. So,
Jock Mahoney. You know. He's the guy who got dysentery you talked about last week.
Yes, the famous dysentery story. Go back and listen to that one if you want to hear that. But Jock Mahoney was actually a pretty good Tarzan, if you go back and watch those movies. And Gordon Scott, the two Gordon Scott films financed by the British were Tarzan's Greatest Adventure with Sean Connery as one of the villains, and Tarzan the Magnificent, where the villain is Jock Mahoney. That's how he got the job of Tarzan. The producer saw him and said, okay, you want to be Tarzan? Because they were tired of Gordon Scott. But there was something in the Gordon Scott films that I wish I had seen in this that happens in the Burroughs novels where Tarzan is walking around with a bow and an arrow and his knife.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the Burroughs image, and even in some of the books he's carrying a rifle. He's not dumb, you know. He will carry firearms. There's no code of honor here, but because this is a PG-13 movie, I think they didn't want Tarzan carrying his knife or his bow and arrow or any real violent weapons, because he's basically, you know, going to be a guy with gorilla strength or Mangani strength or whatever you want to call it.
There's this shot in Legend of Tarzan where Tarzan has to fight the silverback gorilla, you know, to he's left the tribe.
Mangani hunter, not gorillas.
Manganis.
Yes, Tarzan was not raised by gorillas, contrary to what the Disney movie will tell you. They were Manganis. They don't exist. They're not real. They're Burroughs fantasy creations.
Well, it's like there's this shot where Tarzan's jumping at the gorilla, and you get the slow motion of Tarzan, slow motion gorilla, and my dad goes, that guy would be like a fly on a windshield. You know, I'm glad, you know, Tarzan kind of got the shit kicked out of him by the main game.
Well, because he was out of shape. That's what I had. Like, there were some Burroughs fans complaining on one of the various Burroughs Facebook groups I'm a member of, and they were complaining that they thought Tarzan was too weak in a lot of the film and got his ass kicked too much. But then somebody pointed out, well, he's like a stuffy English lord. He hasn't been to Africa in 10 years.
Well, and okay, one thing I liked about this movie was that it wasn't – it has the origin in it, but it's not an origin story.
Right, because we're so tired of it.
We start with Tarzan. He's Lord John Clayton in England, you know, and you have Jim Broadbent as the Prime Minister.
Right.
And, you know, one thing I liked about it was that we start with him in England and he's going back to the jungle. You know, he's compelled back because Leon Rom, who was a real person, by the way, played by Christoph Waltz, and the King of Brussels are trying to get diamonds. There's this chief who runs the diamond mine, or he has the area where they would mine the diamonds, played by Jaimin Hansu. Tarzan killed his son. He wants Christoph Waltz to bring him Tarzan so they can get the diamonds.
Right.
And that's kind of the plot. Alexander Skarsgård is Tarzan. What'd you think of Alexander Skarsgård in the role?
He was a surprise. I didn't think he'd be any good at all. And it was a total surprise because he played him very, very fey and wussy in the earlier parts of the movie. Mm-hmm. Almost like Tarzan, the totally, you know, tea-drinking English Greystoke, you know, just kind of like, oh, come on, that can't – you know, like even Jackson's character is like, you know, Samuel Jackson being in the film going, you're Tarzan, man! You are Tarzan!
He's like, yes.
And there's actually – I think there's actually a point later in the film after he gets his ass kicked with his first encounter with Waltz's men where – like, literally, the George Washington Williams character that Jackson is playing is like, you need to become Tarzan! You know, it's like, what just happened to you back there?
Well, Tarzan, the Samuel L. Jackson character, George Washington Williams, another actual person.
Right.
I thought he was one of the things that surprised me about the movie.
Yeah,
he was really fucking funny.
I thought he was going to be the total mitigating, just a mitigation for modern audiences thinking it's a hokey concept, and that's all he was going to be. But no, he actually turned out to be a pretty good character, and it was a restrained performance from Jackson for once.
Yeah, it was. My dad said he was probably his favorite thing about the movie. Like, I wasn't a big fan of Christoph Waltz as Rom.
No, he phoned it in. If it doesn't have that Tarantino dialogue, he's not quite the same actor.
He's given good performances. I liked him in Big Eyes a lot as Walter Kane. But he's very underwritten in this.
Yeah.
And his villain, frankly, is kind of a pussy. Like,
right.
He just lets Jane walk all over him and treat him like shit. And he's just like, he's way too nice to her.
Right.
And at the same time, one thing my dad fucking hated about the movie was the clear anti-Catholic bent that it had. My dad was like, he goes, this movie's very hostile to the church. My dad's very Catholic. And I said, yeah, the moment I saw a rosary pop out of Christoph Waltz's hand, I went, here we go.
Jane even did a, you were close to your priest as a boy.
Oh, she did a pedophile priest crack. And my dad and I were talking, we were like, people didn't talk like that back then.
That wasn't actually the thing. There was a lot of anachronisms in the dialogue.
Yeah, that was one thing. And another thing I didn't really care for was Margot Robbie as Jane because she talks like she blogs for Jezebel or something.
Right.
She's a badass bitch. She's going to tell you what's up.
Exactly. They got one thing right is they had her with an American accent.
Yes.
Jane is a Southern woman from Virginia. She's not an English lady. And which is something they always screw up in all the movies because Maureen O'Sullivan was the first talkie Jane, I think.
Yes,
and
that's Mia Farrow's mom, right?
Right, and she's very British in her delivery. I guess at that time it was considered a mid-Atlantic accent. And so everybody always thought Jane was English because they never read the books. And that was kind of a weak point in the film. I mean, the movie has its weaknesses. It's got problems. And a lot of that, I think, is also inherent in the script.
Yes.
The Adam Kazad script, I think, which was written for director Steven Sommers.
There you go. Right
I think that's where a lot of those problems came from. That's the director of the first two Mummy movies and the two G.I. Joe movies. Not really the pulp auteur that, you know, when I heard that Sommers was attached to this film at one point, I was like, oh, God, this would have been, that would have been just a disaster.
It would have been just a roller coaster. That's all it would have been. Like, not anything interesting. Because that's what Steven Summers does. And, but yeah, like, because I thought the villain was very two-dimensional, but I didn't, and, you know, Jane just, I thought she was just way too cunty. As a female lead, I don't find women who talk like that to be interesting or somebody to root for.
Right.
And you know, and plus, like, if she's able to talk like that and the villain goes, I'm going to check my mustache. I'm kind of like, who are these fucking idiots that they're going up against?
Exactly. It's not really a great match for Tarzan. I guess that's why you have Digimon Hansu as the tribe leader.
Yeah, so. Like, Digimon Hansu, like, if we had more of him, like, I was like, he was a better villain, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because Jaimon Hansu, you know, you just point a camera at him, you get instant, like, menace and, you know, just
He's an imposing figure.
Yeah, he is.
You know, and it's just like, especially when you've got, you know, Skarsgård, who got ripped to the gills for this movie and is a big guy. He's like 6'2 or something. And you put on a hell of a lot of muscle for a guy with his, you see those silly internet stories. You know, Skarsgård ate a 7,000-calorie-a-day diet to bulk up for Tarzan. No, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
Wait, no, he took some PEDs. But, you know, you do what you do. You're an actor. You do what you do. I'm not saying anything. There's actually anything bad about that. No. So it's like, and he actually got a really good Tarzan physique for this, probably.
Yeah, he looked good with his shirt off.
Probably the best built Tarzan since Mike Henry. And if you know what I'm talking about, go back and Google photos from Tarzan of the Valley of Gold. Mike Henry was a football player who played Tarzan and, you know, had the right physique. And so he's like probably the best Tarzan physique. And his performance wasn't working for him at first, but then about halfway through the movie, he really kind of became Tarzan, and I got into
it. Yeah, you know, he's kind of a non-entity during the early parts.
Because I'm used to the stoic warrior Tarzan of the Gordon Scott movies or the Jack Mahoney's or even Johnny Weissmuller was just a grunting, you know, me Tarzan, you retard.
Yeah, exactly.
But Mike Henry, you know, they play Tarzan as kind of like an intimidating warrior, you know, the jungle, and Skarsgård didn't really play him like that. He played him as like a guy raised by apes who became an English lord. So, but in a way, he also basically was more like Tarzan in the novels in some ways, and in some ways he wasn't. But yeah, like the scene that probably sold the movie for me, because I was kind of on the fence, you know, for a while, was where he and Jackson land on that train and
That's my favorite scene in the
movie. And then he goes down into the car where all the Belgian soldiers are and he just beats them all up. Like, it looked like Bruce Lee going through Hans Guards and Enter the Dragon. And that's like the best action scene in the movie. CGI.
My dad and I agreed that was the best part of the movie. And plus it was funny. Like,
yes.
Like Samuel Jackson shoots that guy's earlobe off and then like he points the gun again at like the people like kind of part to the side. Like it was a great visual gag. That was my favorite sequence in the movie, was the train scene. In the big finale scene, it has all these CGI wildebeests, which are some that felt like a Steven Summers bit because they're just magically conjured up from somewhere.
Right.
And like that final action scene where the wildebeests, Tarzan comes in with the wildebeests and they overrun this town. I didn't feel any impact, you know, like it.
Well, because it's so CGI blur and
like I didn't. And Tarzan's like swinging around and doing these things, but it feels like a computer. Like it didn't even look. It didn't even look that real. Like it looked like they went for they lowballed the special effects bids or something.
Yeah, it did. I don't know if I buy into the $170 million budget.
No, I don't either, because you know we just watched Sky Captain, and that was the first movie to do farming. That was apparently one of the first movies to farm out special effects. And this movie didn't look as good as Sky Captain with its CGI. I mean, I was sitting there, I was sitting there thinking, like, you know, after Rise and the new Planet of the Apes movies, there's no excuse not to have great looking stuff like that.
Exactly. It's like those are probably the peak of CGI for these days. You know, this this was getting into that real ugly Peter Jackson territory, except, you know, by portraying at least things that are real to Earth, like all those animals in the finale. It's but the problem was they were making them move too fast. Like, those animals don't move that fast.
Well, and I really thought it was kind of a mistake to make this movie history. You know, they include the King of Brussels and, you know, Rom and splitting up the dividing up the Congo and colonialism and all that stuff. I was like, that's not the way you should be going with this. Like, this needs to be John Carter. It needs to be fantasy, you know?
Yeah, and the funny thing is, the timing is wrong for Tarzan, because in the novels, if you go by what Philip Jose Farmer figured out, Tarzan's born in 1888. Mm-hmm. So he would have been 3 years old when this movie was set. You know? It's like, because Tarzan's fight in the books, he's fighting in World War One. He fights in World War Two, because he's a guy discovered in 1913 by Jane Porter's father and everything, and D'Arnaud, the Frenchman. Yeah. And I gotta go back and read the novel. I haven't read it in like 30 years. And
I've got the first two books, and I've got the you sent me Tarzan Alive, the farmer.
Right. I sent you my old paper. That's my old paperback, and because I got a nicer trade edition. And that I found at a Barnes & Noble bargain bin.
Yeah, and I know Brewer was probably aware of the farmer stuff, because I know Mike McCarthy's a massive Jose Farmer fan.
Oh, so he's all World Newton Universe.
Yeah. Like, he knows all about that stuff. Like, because I remember I think he's the first one who told me about Philip Jose Farmer doing a Tarzan biography.
Right. Well, Philip Jose Farmer later wrote an official Tarzan novel that has not been reprinted since. It wasn't very good. I couldn't get through it.
No, like, it wouldn't.
A lot of these writers, they can't. Once you read the Burroughs Tarzan, for some reason, like Joe Lansdale and Philip Jose Farmer can't quite get a handle on the character.
Well, and the first Tarzan novel is like, because we talked about this last week, but it bears repeating that it's a great read today. Like, a lot of these old pulps that, you know, like, I love the movies of, like, Fantomas, Dr. Mabuza, all that stuff. I try reading the books, can't get past the first chapter. You know,
you can't. Stiff.
And whereas Tarzan, John Carter, that stuff is still like leaps off the page. It comes to life when you read it.
Because Burroughs knew what to write to keep you reading.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't learn writing in a college. He was self-taught. But he knew what he wanted to read, because he was reading those magazines and thinking, I could write better stuff than this, and he did.
Yeah,
you know, by his death in 1950, he was selling more books than William Faulkner, you know, probably Mark Twain, probably all these writers that were such a big deal back then. Maybe even Ernest Hemingway. Like, the Tarzan book sold like crazy.
And you know what's sad is that stuff's not in print anymore. And you know,
because this kind of I think we expect kids to be a lot stupider than they are.
Yeah.
We underestimate children, that they can't handle these concepts and ideas. Like I pointed out, my son loves Twilight Zone. My son is 6 years old.
Yeah.
He loves it. He will watch. He is now at a point where he will watch one without creatures, and there's not a lot with creatures anyway, but he will watch one without like a supernatural monster menace of any sort.
Those are the commie episodes, John. You better watch out.
Yeah, and he will ask
going to be liking D-class cucking commie memes, memes for commie proles on Facebook pretty soon.
Although the funny thing is, when you look at what was considered a liberal bias in entertainment with something like Twilight Zone, comes off almost like conservatism.
Oh, it totally does. I'm just joking.
Yeah, yeah, but, and I'm not talking about that George Will conservatism. I'm talking about the real stuff, if
by
you know
George.
What I mean. Yeah, but no, it's like it's funny how that stuff is kind of reversed over the decades. But yeah. I let my kid watch Twilight Zone because I said 6 years old, he can handle it. I watched grown up films when I was six.
Well, I watched Nick at Night when I was a kid, and I watched like Get Smart, and I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah,
you know?
Oh, I loved that when I was seven.
Yeah,
it was my favorite show. But it's like, and I got it, I understood it. You know, I'd watch the Rockford Files with my grandmother. It's like, and Gunsmoke and all that stuff. It's like, we assume kids need to read juvenile entertainment till they're 15 or something, or 16. It's weird.
Older than that.
It's like, I think, yeah, you're right. And I think, I don't know, it's maybe like this generation where you walk into a comic book store and you don't see any kids there.
No, which is a fucking travesty. When I was a kid, I would go to the comic book store all the time.
Yeah.
And it was weird. I never felt welcome.
Right.
You know, I always felt like, because it was all adults in there. And my dad hated taking me there. And it was a fine comic book store, but the people there were dicks. Like, yeah. They were always jerks. And I was a kid going in there.
Even in Jackson, Mississippi, there were dicks.
And it was like, you know, they were all the comic book guy from The Simpsons, you know?
Like, right, they were. It was just like they were just kind of these weird man children.
Yeah, and they were really angry that I was coming in and buying Archie comics, you know? Well, I bought superhero stuff too, but, you know. I did love my Archie comics.
Well, because they wanted you to buy that. They wanted to buy you to buy that 3-month-old Batman they put a $5 markup on.
Oh, of course.
Or they were such scum. I would
go through the books and they'd be like, I would just kind of glance in them to see if I wanted to get it or not, and they'd be like, put it down, either buy it or don't touch it, you know. I was like, fuck you, you fucking nerd.
Jesus. But yeah, when I heard like the one in Jackson went out of business, I was like, that's actually kind of a good thing.
I know.
They deserve. It was a branch of Memphis Comics. And called the Star Store, and they went out of business. And I was like, well, probably deserve it the way they
Although
did.
Although I will say, there is a comic book store by my house called Keith's Comics, and those people are really cool. They will go like, oh, hey, what are you looking for? I'm looking for this. They'll go like, well, we don't have that, but I'm going to call other stores and see if they got it. And they go, okay, our store over here's got it. We're going to mail it in. We'll call you when we get it in. And they call you, and they give it to you. You know,
They actually call you and they actually hold it for you?
Yes, they like actually like have customer service. I was like, holy shit. Because like,
boy,
I was like, nope.
Mile High Comics can't seem to do that correctly. And they have like 3 branches here in Denver.
Yeah, like I'll go over there and I'll be like looking for some Judge Dredd or like some Mike Barron stuff or whatever. And they're like, oh, you know, we don't have it, but the store over out in the suburbs does. We can have them hold it for you or we'll send it down here. And I'm like, send it down here. I'll wait. And they're like, okay. And then the next day I get a phone call. Oh, we got it in. Like they like courier it down. You know?
Yeah. So it actually takes some pride in their work. So they don't want you
going on the internet. They do. And, you know, and I sometimes see kids in there. So that is a good comic book store. So they're not all gone.
Yeah. It's like around here, it's like the stores are just, well, I mean, comic books are so expensive now. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, they are. They're crazy.
It's like, I wouldn't pay money for that stuff. It's not worth my money
and time. And like the big publishers, it's like, don't even fucking bother. Like Marvel Comics. Oh, let's read the Justin Trudeau superhero comic.
Oh, yeah. But you're not getting my money anymore, Disney Marvel cuck.
In this comic book, Justin accidentally elbows a lady in the face.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I'd buy that.
On the Senate floor.
Justin Trudeau's bionic elbow.
Yeah.
Or how he just requotes some magazine article about computers and then all the liberals like start masturbating over his
appearance. Speaking of masturbating, in this issue, Justin Trudeau legalizes dog blowjobs and then gives one.
Yeah, I remember I was in a store when they had that Spider-Man and Obama comic book. And a guy at the store was like, I'm a little tired of seeing his face everywhere. He's like, I didn't vote for him.
And meanwhile, Donald Trump is MODOK, you know.
Like, yes, that's really in touch with your readers up there.
Yeah.
It's like, oh God. They've always had a bug up their ass about all that stuff.
Where's Dan Seatler when we need him?
Yeah. Not get my money. It's like, I don't care. It's like, you know, if I were them, I'd figure out a way to go back to newsprint, lower the price to like 99 cents, sell it in grocery stores, then you would actually have comic books again.
That's where I would get my grocery my comics was in the line at the grocery store a lot of times. Like I'd be in line with my mom and I'd be like, oh, there's an Archie Digest, and my mom would go like, okay, you know, and she'd grab me one of those, or hey, there's a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Digest. My mom would be like, yeah. It's like, it's a buck, you know, who cares?
No, when I used to go to the drugstore in the 70s and there would be a rack of comics, and you know, back then they were 50 cents or 45 cents, and it's like, you get 2 for a dollar. It was easy, and then I became a comic book fan.
You know what, my favorite was when I was a kid was if at the grocery store they had Spider-Man magazine, which was reprints of the old like Jack Kirby, Stan Lee stuff.
Or Steve Ditko.
Steve Ditko.
Kirby never did Spidey.
No, you're right. Sorry,
come on,
God.
Man, where's your knowledge?
Don't you understand? This is why I was kicked out of the comic book store.
Tarzan and Gorillas Kirby and Spider-Man.
Ditko. I don't know why I said Jack.
Or John Romita and all that stuff. Yeah,
John Romita was my favorite. And John Romita Jr. was doing a lot of Spider-Man at the time when I was a kid too. So yeah, but like they would reprint all that stuff in Spider-Man magazines. So like anytime I could find one at a grocery store, I'd get excited because I get to read like classic, like, oh, Peter Parker is just a teenager in this one.
Right. He's actually in high school. And
he's in high school kind of... and then Flash is going to beat him up. Yeah. But
right,
he can't
right.
fight back hiding, because he can't he
hiding
can't reveal
his power or whatever.
You know, oh, I can't reveal myself. Aunt May, the shock would kill her. It's now Aunt May is being played by Marissa Tomei, so he can't use
that
excuse.
Yeah, they've distorted all that stuff. But well, I remember being really excited when I was like 10 because I think Marvel Tales was reprinting the original Ditko run on Spider-Man, and so I was buying those and finally able to read these stories because back then you were at the mercy of whatever they decided to reprint because there was no way you could get a hold of some 60s Spider-Man comic. And they didn't publish a trade collection like they do nowadays, where you can just go down to the store and buy a really nice full-color reprint trade edition of 20 issues for, like, you know, $15 or whatever.
You know, like, you can get the essential, you know, Hulk, the essential Fantastic Four, but the problem with those is that even though they're cheap, they're in black and white.
Well, get the I go for the Marvel Treasury editions. I'm getting rid of a lot of my essentials because, yeah, that Kirby looks terrible in black and white.
He does. Oh, he looks like – it looks like shit.
DC did a Mr. Miracle trade and for some reason didn't print it in color. It's the worst looking trade reprint I've ever seen. I don't know if they finally issued the Mr. Miracle stuff in color, but it's like it looks horrible. It looks like a Xerox of a color comic book on each page. And this is the thing. Mr. Miracle is Kirby based upon Steranko.
Oh, really?
So, Yeah, he even kind of looks like Jim Steranko. So it's like, because Jim Steranko was an escape artist, and that's Mr. Miracle. And but I think they did a Fourth World hardcover edition. I'd have to track it down where they finally put this in color. But that's my thing, because I was, you know, cleaning out my shelves, and I looked at that Mr. Miracle. I'm like, what in the fuck were they thinking? It's like, why would you print Kirby in black and white? It doesn't work. It's like his stuff is made for color. The only stuff that looks okay in black and white is Gene Colan. Gene Colan did the old Howard the Ducks, and he did the early Daredevil, or like midpoint Daredevil, where he got his red suit that everybody knows. And Gene Colan's stuff looks okay in black and white. But I had a Doctor Strange trade with Gene Colan art, and it's like, no, it's for color, because when he's doing his spells and shit, you know, they're always in color. So it doesn't make much sense in black and white, but the DC War comics, some of those have been okay in black and white, but otherwise I just like, I'm now going for the color. Like I got a Master of Kung Fu omnibus edition. You know, I had to get that. And that's just, boy, you could kill a man with the size of that damn thing. Use it like a baton and hit somebody and crack their skull. But I got to read Shang-Chi in color. You know, it's like Marvel finally paid some royalties to the Sax Rohmer estate because somebody made the dumb decision of using Fu Manchu. Oh, I'm sorry, it was editor Roy Thomas. Using Fu Manchu in the comic book. Thus, they would always have to pay a royalty to the Sax Rohmer if they ever reprinted those stories. So they finally got reprinted this year because Disney cut a check to the Rohmer estate. Said, okay, we want to do Shang-Chi, Master Kung Fu. So it's like, but that stuff is just phenomenal. It's like
I've never read it.
Oh, it's great because it's like pulp meets 60s spy meets 70s comics.
Oh, well, I'm all about
it's like this incredible blend, and it's like, and Paul Gulacy started doing the artwork, I think about a couple of, or about 10 issues in or whatever. It was Jim Starlin when it started, and Paul Gulacy was basically the first Steranko influenced artist, and his stuff looks good. Like it's quite a thing, but the omnibus, you can. I found it at an outlet for $65. I think it retails on Amazon for like $120. So it's quite a dent in the wallet. But
yeah.
you can find deals on it though. I mean, they're
I'm
out.
I'm sure I can find it at Half Price Books.
I mean, to me, it's worth it. I had some issues when I was a kid. My mom gave them away at a garage sale without telling me when I was nine. When I was 9 years old. Oh, I just gave all your comics away. There was this little kid that came to the garage sale and asked. It's like. Oh, it's like, I can't believe that. And it's like,
Did you at least get the money?
No, she didn't. She probably just gave them to him. She's a weird, like, a Catholic guilt thing or something. I don't know. It's just, oh, I give it to the poor. It's like, oh,
you just
got to
give them. I want the money, Mom.
And it's like, so I finally am able to read those comics again by buying this expensive ass book that
you
I could
make
kill.
Your mom pay for it. Just be like,
I could
mom,
exactly. She sent her a bill for $65, but it's like I could kill a friggin' Al Qaeda terrorist with this book. You know, it's like a cannonball. I could kettlebell swing with it. That's how heavy it is. But you know, at least the reproduction looks good and it's in color. So I'm gonna have to hunt down some Kirby stuff like that. I do have, like, the Fantastic Four in color. You gotta have that in color.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
yeah. No, it looks terrible in black. I have the Essential Marvel edition, and it's just not the same.
Which, speaking of it, to tie it into our show, I did a pre-order.
I was like, how am I going to get us back to Tarzan?
Joe Kubert. The best Tarzan comics of all time that I've seen were Joe Kubert's Tarzan comics for DC in the early 70s. And they were just amazing. You could tell Kubert, like, he read the books. He wanted to really present it the way Burroughs wrote it. And his was fantastic. And Dark Horse announced this week they're doing a hardcover complete Joe Kubert Tarzan, and currently the pre-order price is like $20.
Oh,
so like I had to go for it.
I gotta get that.
Yeah, and it's like he was probably, those are probably the best Tarzan comics I've seen, and there's some good ones, but it's like his were the best. That was like the standard. I mean, and it sold really well too for DC for a while.
Yeah, I've seen this artwork and I'm looking at it. Yeah, available for pre-order.
Yeah, it's highly recommended.
As I record this show, I'm just gonna go ahead and do that.
Right, it's recommended by me. Like, you know, tell him Grace sent you.
but The Legend of Tarzan.
Mm-hmm.
We need to unpack this movie a little more because we've hardly talked about it.
Right, right. Us.
I know, right?
There we go again.
There we go. But so, because I'm not exactly sure what you thought of this movie.
I was surprised. I was entertained. Scenes like the train sequence had put a big smile on my face.
Yeah,
for once I was seeing the Burroughs Tarzan on screen.
Yes.
You know, and you know, I even went to see Tarzan in the Lost City, the Casper Von Dien flop that Warner's kind of just leaked out to theaters in the late 90s, and it's like, and didn't get anything close to this, and I was just like, once I'm seeing Tarzan, it's kind of like the way they're depicting him going through the trees. I've kind of accepted that CGI is just here. That's the way movies are made now. It's like complaining about talkies in 1931. It's just like, this is where technology is. This is what the only thing they think audiences will watch. I can deal with it. I would have rather they hired Cirque du Soleil acrobats and put them in Mangani costumes. But yes, we get CGI Mangani. They look all right. I mean, the whole thing's dark green like every fantasy film today, and I accepted it. At least the content is there. At least the dialogue is a little sharper for Tarzan and George Washington Williams, and the way they try to address, I think, some modern, postmodern issues with the Burroughs concept and kind of like make it safe for today's audiences, it works.
You want to know something kind of damning? My dad said when we walked out of the movie, he goes, "That movie was really PC." My dad never says that. My dad never complains about PC or political correctness. He goes,
right,
"That movie was really PC." He goes, he said it wrung its hands over colonialism.
Yeah.
And he said that it shat on the church, but Jane, her family, they were there for science. They weren't missionaries.
Right.
And they're there for science. So you have the sort of secular, he said the heroes were very secular, the villains were very religious.
Right.
And he said that really bothered him about it. He said he thought it was kind of trying too hard to be the good liberal Tarzan.
Well, that is actually true to the Burroughs novels, because his characters tend to be secular. I think Burroughs, I'm sure,
but it just
Burroughs
sort
himself
of
was sort of a deist, I believe, and you know, at one time did flirt with eugenicist beliefs.
I'm sure Tarzan wasn't Catholic or anything like that, but it just my dad, you know, he's one of these guys who doesn't love movies because he feels it's very hostile to his beliefs, and
he's totally right.
And he said he felt the movie was very, like, he said it was very, you know, hostile towards religion, and, you know, in a very subtle way, and not a very subtle way. I mean, strangling right. people with a, you know, Christoph Waltz strangles people with a rosary. How subtle is that? You know?
Right.
But he was pretty put off by that, and he said he thought it was, you know, it was trying to, you know, play to the culture today.
Yeah, it is. And what's funny is it totally flopped with that think tank.
Yeah, no,
the critics were just, you know, clutching their pearls over this movie.
Oh no, I saw threads on Facebook where everybody was like, "Oh my gosh, this movie, you know, look at the poster, it's so disgusting." And oh my god, like, look at this white man with these apes, it's so fucking gross.
And somebody made a good point. They said, you know, if you had a black Tarzan and you had a really good black actor doing ape sounds and stuff,
people would be losing their shit, you know?
Yeah. Oh, good lord. You know, it's like, you can't, you know, sometimes you just have to accept that's the way the character was designed. He was designed for that white readership of the early 20s, because that's who was buying the magazine that he sold it to, you know?
Yes. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing. It's like, you know, back then it was just different readers, different stuff. It's just like, he just tended to be that character that blew up big. He's not even my favorite Burroughs character. Of course, I prefer John Carter or Mars.
Andrew Stanton's John Carter is by far the best Burroughs movie ever.
It is. Totally. It's uncontested as far as I'm concerned. And I think it's odd that this was a hit, and its main competition at the box office was Andrew Stanton's latest movie.
Finding Dory. Just, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's like everybody kind of, I think that I think one reason they lowballed the numbers for this so much over the weekend, and hence, I don't know if it's going to make its budget back in America, because Tarzan's such an old-fashioned hero, it's hard to say that anybody could relate to
him.
Yeah,
I mean, the second weekend is going to show whether or not.
Right, and I think it'll do well internationally just as an action film. But it looks like it did way better than expected. They were saying it was going to do like 20 million if they were lucky.
Yeah, and I kind of wanted to play a game where I went through Rotten Tomatoes, pulled the reviews, and just see what percentage just hated it because it's racist.
Oh, it was lot of them.
That's all film criticism is. It's sexual politics, race politics. It's all and all that fucking shit that's
right.
just totally taken over everything.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, like, I was really looking forward to this.
Mm-hmm.
Partially, you know, I love Tarzan, I love Craig Brewer, you know, but I was pretty disappointed. I didn't really like the movie.
Right.
I thought it had great scenes. The train scene was great. I really liked their handling of the Tarzan character.
Right.
Samuel L. Jackson. My dad said if Samuel L. Jackson wasn't in it, he probably would have been bored the whole time. He said he goes, I really thought Samuel L. Jackson would ruin the movie. He kind of saved it.
Yeah.
It didn't grip me. It didn't.
Right.
I wasn't like excited all the way through. I mean, there are inferior Tarzan movies that I was more invested in while I was watching.
No, I would actually tell you that I don't think this is as good as some of the, you know, like Mike Henry's Tarzan and the Valley of Gold, which I think got the idea. But even though they were doing Tarzan as James Bond, it was still closer to the concept that I know than what they did in this movie, you know?
And I'm even going to say I think the first half of Greystoke is better than this movie.
I don't agree with that, and mainly because I had problems with some parts of the first half of Greystoke just as something purporting to be pure Burroughs when it really wasn't. Burroughs, I don't recall a scene of Tarzan pissing on an ape's head, full frontal nudity from the teen actor, you know, in a PG film, which there was no PG-13 at the time. And also the kind of the restrained way they had Tarzan, like, you know, like when he killed the native that killed Kala, like he just picks him up, breaks his back, and that's it.
You know?
It's just like, and then in the fight with the ape, where it's like they go into the water, there's blood, Tarzan comes out victorious. That's it. It was like, well, no, that's not what I remember, like, real action in the books and real. They didn't want to show a hero savagely confrontational or something. I don't know what it is. Like, that's where I think this movie succeeded better. Like, even though he was an out of shape Tarzan, it's like, it's just like, at least they got some of the action correct, even though, you know, technically he should be with a knife and a bow and arrow and killing everybody left and right, you know, and saying the great Tarzan yell should be scary and should be just sending shivers down your spine. And here they handcuff they visually and audibly handcuff the concept a bit. Like, there were a lot of things where I thought they could have done it way better. But still, as a depiction of the Burroughs Tarzan, it's probably closer, even though they get a few things wrong, but they get more things right than they get wrong. But, yeah, it's not a perfect film by any means. I just enjoyed it a lot more than I expected, simply because of reading that half the script was originally intended for Steven Summers. So I was expecting garbage.
And, yeah, I thought it was pretty forgettable, other than a few scenes. I just didn't... Right. I really, and believe me, I went into the theater like ready to love it, and
although, you know, I should say the crowd seemed to like it.
The crowd I was with liked it too. I mean, I was definitely, my dad and I were kind of the sticks in the mud there.
You spoil sports. Spoilers.
Of course.
It's not just
like, oh, you know, the movie makes fun of the church. You know, it wasn't anything like that. It was just like, I didn't like the characters that much. I thought visually the movie was pretty dull. It had some good production design.
Well, it's because they CGI'd all of Africa and London. It wasn't,
of course, and you know, it's like, you know, I couldn't get invested in the story because I didn't give a shit about the villain. I didn't care about anything that was going on. You know,
well, one thing I really didn't like, and I thought they could have really, and this is what probably would have been different if Guillermo del Toro had directed it, which he had
some good ideas. He had some good ideas for it.
Yeah, he did. And I think if Guillermo del Toro had directed this, then they would have opened the gates of Opar, and there would have been those beast men in Wa or something. You would have had, because Opar is supposed to be this lost colony of Atlantis that somehow has set up a city inside the African jungle. You know, and it's this great concept that they'll never have in movies for some reason. They're just like, they really hold back on it. And this is the thing they've always done with pulp characters, and I hope to hell Shane Black doesn't do it with Doc Savage. But they always take these characters that are aggressively adventurous and turn them into these passive, reactionary heroes.
Yeah,
you know
they,
what I mean?
They react to things. They're not like, they don't actually, they're not active. They're not proactive, I should say.
Right. And it's like, that's why I like the parts of the movie where Tarzan's finally like, okay, Jane's been kidnapped, now I'm Tarzan again. You know, or now I'm getting used to this jungle thing. Those are the good parts of the movie, but then they seem to have forgotten about it when he starts getting his ass kicked again. You know, it's just like, it's this kind of back and forth stylistic thing that, and it's probably because they used two different screenplays. I'd love to read the original Craig Brewer screenplay that was probably a bit different, and wondering why Warners didn't like the action of that one or the plot of that one. I'm not sure. It's like, but you know, and there's a couple of things. There's those nods to the Weissmuller movies that I didn't feel were necessary. Like Samuel Jackson say, "You Tarzan, me Jane." So I guess we're supposed to believe that Tarzan is a penny dreadful character in England at that time or something.
I don't know. Like there's people are writing books about him or something like that,
right? And he's a hero in fiction or something, but yet he's real. Some of that wasn't quite clear, and that I think comes from two screenplays and you know, mixing them together and not covering all the bases when you do
And it also, it's part of that thing where the movie feels anachronistic,
right? You know, and like, also Jane makes a reference to Cheetah.
Yes,
Cheetah's main call. There's no Cheetah in the novels.
No. That's a Weissmuller thing.
Right. Then now there's Nakima, the little monkey with the tail that is in the cartoons, and he's in the novels, but there's no Cheetah. So there were a couple of things that kind of bugged me as just a Burroughs fan. But, I mean, overall, I the real test for the film for me, because I don't think it's really made for me, is if I take my son to see it.
Okay.
If my son can get into it, and I really do feel it was aimed at it's aimed at children. You know,
there were kids in the theater when I saw it.
Right, and I think kids are the ones probably making it a hit. I think kids and you know, boys who don't want to go see some girly thing like Finding Dory, and I think women probably wanted to go check out Skarsgård. And I think that's why it's
pricey. Oh, I know many girls who were very excited about this movie.
Right, right.
They were also, like, I cannot wait to see me some Andrew Skarsgård beefcake, you know.
Right, right. And when I saw the first trailer, I was like, oh boy, they're going to screw this up. And then I saw the second trailer, I'm like, oh, they're aiming it at women a bit more, I notice. It's like they're going to try to get the women viewers in. And then the third one was the more stronger Mangani ape fight action trailer. And I said, oh, mate, they're trying to get the kids. Maybe they'll succeed getting the women and the kids. And they'll drag along the men, you know. And that's I think that's kind of how it worked.
Yeah.
That's just my guess. And who knows how the audience will maintain this in the second week. I don't think we're going to see a sequel. I don't think it's actually made to have a sequel.
I was kind of hoping we would get, like, I was like, okay, well, I didn't love this movie, but maybe we'll get another one that's good. But you don't think that's going to happen?
I feel like it was made because Jerry Weintraub got it into production before he passed away. And I think they felt obligated to complete it and promote it because it was Weintraub's last production. Mm-hmm. And he's such a legend in Hollywood. And he loved the Tarzan character so much that he wanted a real Tarzan movie. And I think that's the only reason we even see it. And I don't know if Warner's is invested in doing a sequel.
If it's a huge hit, though, they got
if to. It, if it is, they will. If this is a Godzilla and it just stays in the top five for a while, then, yeah, it could be.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we'll see. But, yeah, the next week, once this comes out, this episode comes out, we'll know that more as to whether or not.
Right, right. We'll know if there will actually be a sequel. And I would like to see a sequel.
Me too. Even though I didn't really like it, I still would like another one because it'll be better, hopefully.
Right, because they've gotten all the tropes out of the way.
Yes.
They've gotten a reintroduction of him to this audience, and they've gotten all that stuff, and they've had their jungle adventure. The next movie, they can go to the Earth's core. Hey, why not? If they hadn't made it so anachronistic, they could have combined him with King Kong.
Yeah.
You know, because that would be contemporary to Tarzan's era. But, it's like there's enough here where I would say if you're a Burroughs fan or you just want to see some fun, unforgettable Saturday afternoon movie, it's worth seeing. You know.
I think if you're, I mean, even though I didn't like it, if you're a Tarzan fan, you should see it because it's something new that's Tarzan. You know?
And it's also a lot closer to, I think, the Burroughs Tarzan
and
than
plus,
Grace,
John
even
likes
Greystone.
It, John likes it more than I do. That should give you,
right.
John, that should give you some, you know, that should give you some incentive, you know.
Right.
He's a bigger fan than me.
As much as I want to see Tarzan pull out another's knife and stab some ape in the neck. And it never happened, you know. It's like
a
Tarzan standing over a dead ape and beating his chest and doing his war cry. Yeah, you know, that's what I want to see. You know, I want to see an actor that can pull that off and convince me. You know, why? You know, Weissmuller, the best scenes in the old Weissmuller movies are when, you know, an entire tribe will be like surrounding the safari or whatever, and then they'll suddenly hear the Tarzan yell and they all run away in fear. And you see Weissmuller on top of the cliff and yelling, and they all run. It's like that's the effect they should go for today, which I think they're scared to do that. That's just not quite there. It's like that's what it needed. It needed that, like, they're actually terrified Tarzan has shown up.
Yes.
It's like they there should have been scenes where Waltz was literally about to urinate his pants when he heard the yell.
Yes.
Instead, he was condescending and made a Weissmuller joke, which was anachronistic.
And Waltz just – his character just seemed – hardly interested in anything that was going on.
No, he was phoning it in. He's become the villain for hire. He's become the Donald Pleasance.
Well, and people think
generation.
That they're going to hire him and they're going to get Hans Landa. And that's just not how it works. You know, he in most of the movies he plays a villain in, he's the villain from Green Hornet. You know,
right, right.
I mean, exactly. Just sort of a non-entity.
Right, but, he's just there. He's Euro trash villain. You know, extraordinary.
Yes.
That's all he is. You know.
Well, so what would you give this movie, John?
I'd give it about a 7, which is generous, but I wasn't bored. I didn't dislike it. There were things that bothered me about it, but there was enough stuff that I liked about it where I could say, you know, I'd still say see it. And yeah, probably if my kid likes it, I'll buy it for home video.
I'd give it like a 5. I thought it was had its moments, had some good things here and there, but overall I was pretty disappointed.
Yeah, Hunter representing the Rotten Tomatoes portion of our show.
Yeah, I know. Here's the thing. I really wanted to like it, you know.
Yeah.
Really did. Like, I was super excited, and I just didn't. But it's not because it's racist.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, we didn't really go into the
In fact, the Tarzan movies aspects. I like more are probably way more racist than this movie.
Well, the old Burroughs novels would technically be, by today's standards, very racist compared
to
this.
They would be hate novels, you know. Hate.
Although I noticed in the later ones, it's not that bad. I think once he got away from the eugenics beliefs, he was a bit more open.
Once he stopped hanging out with the Planned Parenthood people, Margaret Sanger and all that.
Yeah, exactly. He quit hanging out with, like, Charles Lindbergh was into those beliefs.
Oh, yeah, Charles Lindbergh. Totally. No, I always hear that Margaret Sanger was a eugenicist.
Margaret Sanger, I believe, it was actually a very popular belief system.
It was huge at the time.
And it wasn't exclusive to white people either. It was just a belief. It was that was the belief, a belief at the time that was mainstream.
It was a good
belief. And I think you can see that belief sometimes in today under nicer names, like pro-choice and all that stuff.
Of course. Yeah. Hey,
it's there.
Hey, there's a reason you don't see retards anymore. It's because they all get aborted now.
They're killing them all out.
They kill them all off.
And the people doing it get mad at you if you use that word as a
insult. I love the Gavin McInnes bit where when people get mad about the word retard, he goes, "Are you pro-choice?
Yeah.
You don't get to get mad about a group about calling a group, you know, a certain name that you embrace the genocide of. That's like Hitler getting sniffy about calling Jews kikes."
Where on what other show are you going to get a Tarzan review in Gavin McInnes quotes? You
know? Exactly.
But it's just like this movie. It's like if you're a Burroughs fan, you got to go see it.
I gave it a 5, and I would say go see it anyway if you like Tarzan, if you like Burroughs, just because it's something new to check out, and maybe you won't. John liked it more than I did.
I will say that on the Burroughs groups, they're pretty much overwhelmingly loving it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're desperate for anything at this
point. Oh, of course! I mean, that's why I'm saying go see it, because how often do you get a new Tarzan movie these days?
Do you know how excited I would be to see a Conan movie that was just a smidgen closer to Red Nails than the Schwarzenegger film, you know?
Well, like, I mean, I was way more lenient on the Jason Momoa Conan movie than I should have been, because I really desperately wanted a Conan movie that was like the Robert E. Howard stories.
I wanted it so bad.
And I was very lenient on it. But, you know, and I was like, I praised Momoa's performance. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, he's a really good Conan. I said the movie's not strong enough. But I was like, but it's you know, it does the job. I went back and watched it recently, and it sucks.
I was thinking about watching it with my wife. Just to
I shouldn't say it sucks, but you know, Momoa is a good.
It's pretty bad, and Momoa's.
But it's
fine.
Not. But it's not like it's. But it's. I definitely was way nicer to it than it deserved.
Yeah, I think I did a podcast about it the week
it
came out.
You did,
and I wasn't. I was disappointed.
Yeah,
but
I
like
you were
I
pretty
like
down on
it,
and I remember talking to you about it. And I was like, I actually really liked it, and you were like, oh, really? You know, like so.
Yeah. I kept thinking maybe it plays better on home video. A lot of people liked it. When they saw it on DVD, and
I
was like,
"Yeah, that's when I saw it. I didn't see it."
And I was like, "Well, maybe it plays better on television." But I know in the theater, I wasn't crazy about it. I wanted it to be so good, and it just wasn't. And it was just—it's like I can't believe they blew this the way they did.
Such an opportunity.
Yeah, it's just like I can't believe they have these blatant opportunities to make these exciting. They can make the new Raiders of the Lost Ark, and they just blow it. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can make something that could blow away the whole Indiana Jones thing if they made a real Conan film or a real Tarzan movie.
Yeah.
And they still just don't. I don't know what they do. It's like these movies are made by people who've never been punched in the face. Maybe that's the problem. I don't know. They just don't get it.
They don't get it. You know?
I don't think they get the concept. It's like they're just made by these kind of asthmatic sissy
types. And the problem with movies is that they're made by committee. You know, it's very hard to get a bunch of people on a movie who are like minded, who will work towards that goal. Because a lot of times you get people who just want to rub their stink on it,
right?
You know,
I think it would be great if Tarzan wore pants through the whole.
You know, like, but you hear stories all the time about like retarded shit, like people at the studio and stuff. They really want you to put this in there.
Yeah.
You know, like, what was it? There's this story about Tom Lennon wrote in his book about working on Herbie Fully Loaded. Okay? You know, the Herbie the Love Bug remake, right?
Right, yeah.
He said, you know, he and his partner got the job to write Herbie the Love Bug. and he said that this executive at Disney was obsessed with Herbie smiling and winking into the camera. He was like, have you seen the movies? But he said that this executive would not budge, and they
because
had
he did it on the poster, probably.
Yeah, and they wanted this in the movie. Like, it was all this shit. Like, he mapped out all this stuff, and it's just insane.
Well, that reminds me of the first crazy Hollywood. I mean, you could read William Goldman's Adventures in the Screen Trade.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And that there's a lot of those type of stories, but there was that one story that was in Stephen King's Dance Macabre about how Harlan Ellison was working on the first Star Trek film with Gene Roddenberry. And they had come up with an idea that I guess the Enterprise found this alternate world where dinosaurs had become the evolved,
right. I remember
the evolved intelligent species, and humans did not exist. And so they find the last of the race, like they're dying out for whatever reason. And so the last being of this dinosaur race comes into our dimension and decides it wants to eliminate all humans. So it travels back in time to our prehistoric time to kind of reverse course. And so the Enterprise has to come up with this idea. It's like, okay, to stop this creature from preventing the dawn of man, but do we have the right to wipe out the last of its breed? You know, it was that whole ethics thing or pathos that you find in the old Star Trek show. Mm-hmm. And so Ellison and Roddenberry presented it to the executive. Roddenberry was really excited about it. And Ellison was like, yeah, I think this is perfect for a movie. And the executive was like, could you put some Aztecs in it? And then Ellison's like, well, Aztecs didn't exist in this time frame. That wasn't until like 1,000 years later or whatever. He goes, well, I was just reading this book about Aztecs. Keep in mind, this is 1973, 74. And he's like, and I think it's just wonderful stuff. And I think there should be Aztecs in it. And he goes, look, I'm not going to put Aztecs in it. It's inappropriate. It's an anachronism. It's not right for the story. And he goes, well, I'm an executive, and when I say I want Aztecs, they're going to be Aztecs. And he goes, then Ellison goes, well, I'm a writer. I don't know what the fuck you are, and flipped him off and out of the meeting.
It's a very Harlan Ellison response.
Yeah, of course. You know, who knows how much of that's true, but because Ellison always embellishes.
Like the couple jerking each other off to The Omen.
They were masturbating over decapitation. Whatever. It's like, okay, you crazy, sure. Crazy drama queen. Learn how to work with people and you get some script shot. And it's like, but no, I totally believe that story because executives want to put their little mark on it. That's why the Marvel movies, the costumes look like shit. And the reason is because they're like, well, we want to copyright our movie versions of the characters.
Yes.
Like, I think the Captain America outfit sucks. Yeah, I think that's the worst dullest costume I've ever seen for a hero in a film. I mean, it makes Dolph Lundgren's Punisher outfit without the skull look faithful. You know, it's just like so boring, and it's like, what, everybody's wearing black? I mean, what the hell's the deal here? You know,
it's like this Bryan Singer X-Men movie. They all wear these jumpsuits. It's like, how could you make it more? It's like, what is this, Star Trek? You know,
it's a New World TV pilot in 1985. Yeah. You know, it's dull, and it's just like, even in this. I'm sure a lot of women in the audience were like, where's the cloth? You know, it's just like, where's Tarzan's loincloth here? You know, because, you know, in the books, he always made stuff out of animal skin.
Yes.
So it's like, can't have him killing an animal and skinning it. Like, you know,
he's a friend of the animals.
Right. I thought the funniest thing was him doing the mating call for crocodiles, which I thought was cool.
That was a funny bit.
But I always, in my Tarzan movies, Tarzan's always fighting the crocodiles like Johnny Weissmuller. That's like the best scene in Tarzan and his mate. That was such a good scene. They recycled that footage in like 5 other Weissmuller movies.
Yeah. You gotta, just because you get that dope, you know, like footage, you gotta put it together.
Kids probably went nuts for that stuff back then. You know, because it looks real, because it was a great fake gator or crocodile, and it looks incredible. You're seeing an actor out there spinning, you know, giant crocodile around and stuff. It's awesome. And it's like, you know, there wasn't as, you know, I enjoyed this film. It's not perfect, but I would rather watch Tarzan Triumphs where he's fighting the Nazis, one of my favorites, just for that, because there's no moment in this movie like there is in the Weissmuller film where he picks up the knife and goes, now Tarzan make war, which supposedly, according to Warren Murphy, co-creator Rima Williams, he said, he was a kid seeing that in a packed theater, and everybody stood up and cheered. It's like, it just, he said it had that effect, and it's like there's nothing like that in this movie, except the train sequence comes close. Like, it comes close enough.
Yeah,
because there is an anti-slavery message in Burroughs' novels. In the novels, he's killing the Arabs who were still, you know, trading slaves.
Oh, but you don't hear about those in,
right? He's going after Arab Muslims. They're the villains in a lot of the novels. Like, is like Tarzan hated the Arabs and really went after the Germans in World War
One. No. Slavery only exists as a white phenomenon, John.
Yeah, it was only something in the American South.
Yeah, only in America. It didn't exist in Brazil well after the Civil War.
Yeah, exactly. Like in South America, it's like, oh Lord. But yeah, there was like that moment in the car, in the train car, was great. It's like the movie needed more of that.
Yeah, like, it did. That was did. That was thing. Fantastic.
And also, Skarsgård was doing this cool kind of ape fighting, you know, move. Like, he wasn't fighting like a normal guy. You know, he was like fighting with like these ape arms and stuff. It's like there was a little wink in the choreography there.
Well, so let's go ahead and wrap it up, unless you got something else to.
Nah, it's just like, if you, you know, like I said, if you're a Burroughs fan, you're going to see this anyway, because it's just a little bit closer than what you've had before. It's closer than the Disney Tarzan, I'll put it that way.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
And I think for a lot of them, they want to see Tarzan reinvented for all audiences instead of being a kid's thing. Because I think there's that fear, after the Disney cartoon was big, I was like, oh no, now Tarzan's just seen as something for babies, you know? And it's like, it's just not what those books were to me when I was young. You know, they were a big deal. But I've also had to accept, just like I love the James Bond of the books, the movies just are never really going to capture it 100%. There's just nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
Unless he was public domain and anybody could make a movie, then you have a better chance. And by the way, I actually think that a character that old should be in public domain anyway. Same thing with Conan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that the family should just be making millions off of the patent. You know, 100-something years later. I think it's ridiculous. I think he should be a public domain character. Anybody should be able to make a Tarzan movie. Because, hey, maybe you'd get one that's really good.
Yeah.
Maybe you'd get one, you know, just like you had that, God, I'd love to get that director on here one day, but the guy who, he made a very faithful Conan film in Thailand called Iron Shadows. And the Conan property holder, I think they were thinking they could get away with the film because the Conan stories are in public domain.
Right.
Like all of Howard's writing is public domain. That's why you can buy all of his known stuff for Kindle for like $2 because it's public domain. But they thought they could get away with it as long as they didn't put Conan in the title. But the Conan patent holders, the one putting out the bullshit stories about Schwarzenegger, is going to do one last.
Oh, he's going to do Conan. Key Conan.
It's never happening. They're just patent trolling. They basically sent them a cease and desist, so the film was never released. And it's unfortunate. I'd like to see it, just to see a better attempt, even if it was only shot for $2 million.
Of course.
And it was probably better than what we've seen before. And the director told me, his sister wrote the screenplay, but they said, no, we basically just wrote the script off of Howard's story. So it's like, that's why, you know, the people owning the Conan properties right now gave you the Schwarzenegger movies and gave you the Momoa film. So they have no respect for the character whatsoever or Howard's writing. And this public, you know, this outfit trying to do it public domain, George Tan was involved as a producer. One reason it didn't work.
Of course.
A common name that's been brought up before. But it's like, still, a public domain filmmaker doing low budget is probably going to do a better job. And it's like, that's why I just wish this stuff was, you know, done in the public domain. So, because the rights holders, they're not always the best, you know, it's not always the best approval board for the work. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like sometimes maybe it takes an outside mind to do it just right. And it's like, who knows? For all I know, some guy working for Millennium Pictures had a better Tarzan movie in mind.
Well, you need a Kerry Conran or some.
Conran or somebody who just says, no, I'm going to do this just like it is. And they're going to act like they did in the 1940s and they're going to talk like that and just get it completely faithful, you know, pure
to the. You need somebody who's into it, who knows it, and who's passionate about it, who's just going to go do it.
Pure to the source, but does this do a okay job of reintroducing Tarzan to modern audiences thinking he's created by Disney or Bo Derek? Yeah, it does a fine job of that.
Absolutely.
You know, better than nothing, I guess. You know.
Yeah, it's better than nothing.
And maybe they'll reprint the novels. Maybe somebody will repackage them. That'd be nice.
All right. So be sure to check us out on at midnightmoviecowboys.com. Look us up, but be sure to like, rate, review us on iTunes, because that really helps. Subscribe, all that good stuff. Stuart will be back next week. He's not here this week because he's dead, but currently witch doctors are bringing him back from the dead.
hopefully blessing him with a Netflix subscription.
Yeah, yes, they'll be doing that.
No, mate, I just ain't paying for it.
No, I am not giving them any shekels.
Fucking Yanks. Fucking gun-toting Yanks.
Yanks. Yeah. They need to take their guns away.
Yeah.
Anyway, but... Oh, boy. Anyway, so, yeah. But that's about it. Yeah, and let us know what you think of Tarzan over on our Facebook page.
Right.
And if you have a favorite Tarzan movie, let us know what that is. So go
there's,
join
there's
us.
Already, there's already threads. There's already threads, I should say, of people yes. talking about it. Some disappointed, some liked it. You know.
So come over and talk about it. Yeah. We'll be talking about it soon.
Yell at us. Holler at your boys.
Holler at your boy, because we're proud of your boy.
And we also need suggestions. We're kind of burning out.
Yeah, we need some suggestions. I think we have a few things we can do. I want to do that Alain Delon Zorro movie you talked about last week.
Oh, yeah.
I got the Blu-ray, so.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we can totally do that.
Yeah, we need to do that one. I've been wanting to do some Zorro movies, so.
Yeah, that's I think, a perfect one to do, because it's not too new and it's not too old.
And it's one I didn't know about until you mentioned it. So I went, Alain Delon is Zorro, sold. You know, just went and bought it.
And I'll say it right now, my favorite version still. And I watch as many old Zorro movies as I can, because I love the character and the concept, but it's still my favorite.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's go ahead and sign out. I'm going to say adios.
And I'll say mahalo and ngawa. There you go.
And suck on Thor's hammer, cucks.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time. Fifteen.